I did get a call from the Dallas Cowboy Cheerleading Association. They wondered if I could join. That's for the benefit of those who were here last Sunday. You'll recall our cheer, "We can do it, we can do it. Yes, we can, yes, we can. We can do it." And you got to move the hips, right? We can do it, we could do it. Yes, we can. You're going, there's no way the Dallas Cowboys, not even the Calgary Stampeder cheerleaders would take us on. And you know what? Truly making disciples, cheery optimism, wishful thinking, some cheerleading from the platform might have an effect, but I want to look at a little more about how Jesus would intend us to carry out this great purpose of the church. Last week, we closed with my big idea. We make disciples because Jesus is worthy. Jesus didn't say, go and get decisions, though we need to get decisions to make disciples, but it's deeper, make disciples. It was not stay and be disciples. We need to be disciples, but there's way more to the Great Commission than just being better Christians. We're to go and make new disciples. Go and make disciples because Jesus is worthy. We looked at Revelation 1, and in the context of Matthew 28, we saw the importance of worship. Jesus is worthy. He is the one who was and is to come. The very description that's given of God. We worship Jesus because he is God. He is the faithful witness. He is the firstborn from the dead. He is the ruler of rulers and the King of kings. He is worthy of our worship, but we looked at last week that we, unfortunately, are not worthy to worship apart from Jesus. But then we're told that he loves us, that he has freed us from our sins by his blood, and he has made us into a kingdom to serve the living God. Jesus is worthy of our worship, and we have that incentive at the end of the Great Commission that Jesus promises that he'll be with us. It's not a case of us just digging down deep and doing it our own, but he is with us. But how do we make disciples? I like this phrase for all kinds of reasons, and I hope you will discover over the next few minutes why I think this is a really good way to view the making of disciples. The missional power of good deeds. And I've been very intentional how that phrase is worded. The missional power of good deeds. Let's look a little bit. We've already had the Harmony Through Harmony group give us some excellent examples of the whole concept of good deeds, and as they focused in on matters of social justice and alleviating the suffering of the poor. But there's other statements. Isaiah 1:17, learn to do right, seek justice, defend the oppressed, take up the cause of the fatherless, plead the case of the widow. Zechariah 7:9 and 10, this is what the Lord Almighty said, administer true justice, show mercy and compassion to one another. Do not oppress the widow or the fatherless, the foreigner or the poor. Do not plot evil against each other. Then into the New Testament, Titus 3:8. This is a trustworthy saying, and I want you to stress these things so that those who have trusted in God may be careful to devote themselves to doing what is good. These things are excellent and profitable for everyone. Galatians 6, 9 and 10. Let us not become weary in doing good, for at the proper time we will reap a harvest if we do not give up. Therefore, as we have opportunity, let us do good to all people, especially those who belong to the family of believers. The yellow light comes on. We need to slow down and reflect on good deeds. And I want to just over the next couple minutes look at what I see as some tensions in the evangelical world when it comes to good deeds. And a great tension, a great debate that goes on as we speak even this morning is this tension between the Great Commission and the Great Commandment. Unfortunately, you've got people who go to extremes and say, I want to defend my turf, my little bit of what I see as important. So there are those who would say, I will defend the Great Commission. It's all about making disciples, And social justice is good, it's nice, but it's not quite as important as the Great Commission. There's other people on the other side who say, well, it is all about the Great Commandment. After all, Jesus, when he's asked, what really matters? What is important? There's so many commands, so many things for us to obey. And Jesus said, well, let me sum it up. Love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, strength, and mind. And linked to this, love your neighbor as yourself. What I would suggest is that it's not either or, but it's both and. It's not you choose the Great Commission or the Great Commandment. It's both. In fact, I go even further than that. I believe there needs to be an integration of the Great Commission and the Great Commandment. Isn't it interesting that when Jesus says, go and make disciples, and then we have this kind of leap between going and baptizing, which is obviously where we are promoting the gospel, and then Jesus says, and teaching them to obey everything that I have commanded. I think this teaching is more than just a case of disciples becoming better disciples, but I believe that in the thrust of that teaching is Jesus' command, love your neighbor as yourself. Let me put it this way, and I realize that this is an area that can be confusing and it is controversial, but I believe that if you only promote the Great Commission to the exclusion of the Great Commandment, there is a hole in your theology. And I would also say that if you only promote the Great Commandment to the exclusion of the Great Commission, there's a hole in your theology. I am pushing for integration. Now, some would say, John, there's a danger here, because the problem is always that if we say that the Great Commandment links to the Great Commission, we can lead to the danger of saying it's kind of a means to an end. And there's a lot of people critical of that. You've heard me refer before to what we call bait and switch theology, where you lure them in with your good deeds, but then you pounce on them with the promotion of the gospel. Or what some in the greater mission world would call rice Christianity. We will feed you with rice, provided you stick around for a three-hour presentation of the gospel. Or we fed you with rice, therefore surely you feel obligated to stick around for that purpose. I would argue that we should never, ever be manipulative. It should never be a matter of us exploiting people in that way. But I still am firm that we need to integrate the Great Commission and the Great Commandment. It needs to be both. And it needs not be just a case of, well, we'll do the Great Commandment over here, and then we'll go over here and do the Great Commission. No, there's an integration. Let's look at the other tensions real quick. Yes, I'm all for individual salvation. To me, it's key. To me, it's vital. But the gospel is epic. It involves not only the restoration of man with God, but man with man, woman with woman. It involves creation. The gospel is epic. Let's make sure our gospel isn't too small. The gospel is epic. Next tension, spiritual poor and literal poor. A whole lot of people who lean maybe too heavily on the Great Commission side would say, yeah, all the references to the poor in Scripture are metaphors. Sorry, I don't buy that. I think when Jesus says he came to promote the gospel, preach good news to the poor, it's the poor. It's the literal poor. It's talking about material things. So we need to be careful at that tension. Proclaiming the gospel, absolutely. How will they understand? How will they respond if they've never heard? But I also believe, as you'll see in the next few minutes, that there's a case for demonstrating, or I even like the word better, incarnating the gospel. Just as God the Father reveals, or Jesus reveals what God the Father is like, we have a chance through good deeds, our behavior and actions, to reveal what Jesus is like. Some would say, yes, but John, good deeds should just be viewed as the fruit of obedience. Absolutely. If you really are a disciple of Christ, as just part of who you are, it's the message of Ephesians 2 and 10. We are his workmanship by redemption, created to do good works. It's who we are. It's the fruits of obedience. But just give me a few minutes this morning to make a case for what I see as the missional power of good deeds. So let's look at this passage. The group referred to it in one of their pieces. This little snippet from Matthew 5, 13 to 16, part of the Sermon on the Mount, and Jesus is saying how we are to be salt and light to our world. You are the salt of the earth, but if the salt loses its saltiness, how can it be made salty again? It is no longer good for anything except to be thrown out and trampled under feet. That's a bit convicting. If you're not a salty Christian, you're really not a useful Christian. You are the light of the world. A town built on the hill cannot be hidden. Neither do people light a lamp and put it under a bowl. Instead, they put it on a stand, and it gives light to everyone in the house. Here's the punchline. In the same way, let your light shine before others, that they may see your good deeds and glorify your Father in heaven. The power of good deeds, the power of demonstrating the gospel, the power of incarnating Jesus to the world around us. Words are important, but I think sometimes words are overrated. We were at a football banquet the other night for our son Mark, and they were giving out different awards, and it was one of those nights that I will never forget. One of the highlights was just as we were in the line getting the meal at the buffet, one of Mark's coaches, here's a young guy who played at Western for 4 years, a great football player, and he's got a little business now. He comes up to me at the buffet table, and he says, "Mr. Mackey, you're a pastor, aren't you?" I'm always afraid when that question is posed. And then in the next breath, he goes, "I just want to let you know, 6 months ago, I became a born-again Christian." I went, "What?" After I kind of recovered, I said, what church are you with?" He says, "Yeah, I'm going to such and such an Anglican church." I thought, wow, we're not used to that, are we? The born-again language. And I thought, hey, Lord, you're so big. And it was just a delightful conversation with this young man who's on fire, who then asked me, "Hey, have you ever heard the song, How Great Thou Art?" I thought, well, I've heard it a couple of times, or maybe even of some. And I thought, here was a young guy, maybe about 25, 6 months a believer, on fire for Christ. But the evening got better. The guest speaker that evening was David Lee. Some of you know David, really good football player here in London, played 4 years for Western and signed with the Toronto Argonauts just on Friday night, got his Grey Cup ring. And so David gave a talk. And in this talk, he didn't once mention the name of Jesus. He couldn't in a public school setting. But he let his light shine. He talked about values. He talked about behavior. The boys were riveted on their seats. Parents were just on edge as they listened to this great inspirational talk. Afterwards, I had one of the fathers come to me and he said, "John, that was an incredible talk. That was so inspirational, so powerful." And I just let him go on a little bit, and I said, "Yeah." And I said, "You know, David's dad is a pastor here in the city." He says, "What? He is?" And for the next 5 minutes, I was able to talk about Jesus in that setting. What was interesting was I talked to David's wife. She happens to be David Main's granddaughter. Maybe some of you know that connection. And she said to me, "This is a hard night for David because he would so like on this kind of occasion to talk about Jesus." And I looked at her and I said, "There's been talking about Jesus here tonight because he let his light shine." Oh, I'm all for promoting the gospel through our words, but we can promote the gospel through our deeds. Let your light shine. Karsten, the next slide. Jesus likely adopted the teaching of Isaiah 49 when he talks about being a light to the world. He says, "It is too small a thing for you to be my servant to restore the tribes of Jacob and bring back those of Israel I have kept." And then look at here. He says, "I will also make you a light for the Gentiles that my salvation may reach to the ends of the earth." Here's little Israel. And Jesus is saying, "I can use you to be a light to the world." And then if we go back, Karsten, go backwards, to Matthew 5, 13, 16. In the same way, let your light shine. You are the light of the world. A town built on a hill cannot be hidden. So a few years ago, we took our tent trailer and headed for the West Coast. One evening, we pulled into Calgary, Alberta, to the KOA, Calgary KOA, actually a fabulous campground. And I went into the little shop there, and the lady said, "What are you pulling?" And I said, "An 8-foot tent trailer." She said, "Oh, we've got a little section for the 8-foot tent trailers." I said, "Well, you need to know, I need a pull-through." She said, "What?" And I said, "Yeah, I've been driving all the way. I really can't back up this thing. In fact, I haven't had to back it up yet. And isn't it pathetic?" And she said, "Well, the only pull-throughs we have are with the big rigs." And she said, "And they got these big power amps, you know, the 30-watt power." And she says, I said, "We'll take it." So can you imagine this here? And they were big rigs. They were big rigs, okay? And we're pulling in beside. Actually, I heard the woman, I'm sure I heard this woman in the booth say to a colleague, "He's from the East." He's from the East. We'll tolerate him. So anyways, can you imagine? And if you know the Calgary KOA, it's kind of up on a hill. It's actually not too far from where they did some of the Winter Olympics back in 88. There you go, 1988. And here's what was neat. We decided that evening to go out for a night of Calgary culture. So as we were heading back from the chuck wagon races at the... there's Calgary culture for you. The chuck wagon races that night at the Stampede. We're heading up and you see all these lights from the campground. And even our little 8-foot trailer was contributing to this brilliant light show. Here's my thing. Hey, listen, we're not the biggest church in London. We're sure not the biggest church in Canada. But we can let our light shine and let this world know about our Lord Jesus Christ. And it has impact. There is a missional power, because at the end of Matthew 5:16, we see this, Jesus uses the word doxia, the idea of glorifying the Lord. One of the key hallmarks of a disciple is that it's not just a person who's made a simple decision for Jesus, it's someone who has a deep relationship, who sees the worth of Christ, who is in fact a full-hearted, wholehearted worshiper of Jesus. Let your light shine so that the world might see. Next slide, Kirsten. There's our little trailer, and let's go to the next one. I just want to make a couple of references just as we're closing out. You guys did such a wonderful job making a case for social justice. I believe that good deeds does involve good moral behavior, kind acts, being good to others, but it definitely has to go deeper. This whole issue of social justice, the idea of administering justice, the idea of thinking about those who are poor, alleviating the needs of the poor. I'm going out with international teams to Africa, and their mission is intriguing. In fact, at first it kind of rankled my evangelical sensibilities, but their mission is helping churches help the poor. And I thought, you know what? I need to be thinking that way when I go to Africa. I've had a couple of the guys who were there last year, and they said, "John, that's what's going to blow you away the most. You think you've seen poverty? You haven't seen anything yet. Helping churches, like Byron, help the poor." Here's a book. It's actually going to be out tomorrow. You're going, "Well, how do you have a copy of it?" Well, I happened to be at a conference in Chicago, and the author gave me a copy of the book entitled Gospel Justice, Joining Together to Provide Help and Hope for Those Oppressed by Legal Injustice. The foreword is by a fellow named Tony Evans, who is a pastor in Texas, president of the Urban Alternative there. He tells a little story which I found really captivating. Said, many years ago in Europe sanitariums, they used to determine whether an inmate was ready for release by placing them in a janitor's closet. Stoppers were placed in the wash basin and the water turned on to overflowing when the inmate was put in the closet and asked to mop up the mess. Staff would leave and return 10 minutes later. If the water was still running, then the inmate had no capacity to get to the root of the problem. Much ministry today is spent mopping up messes rather than unplugging stoppers. Someone said the other day, we are so exhausted trying to keep each other happy that we miss the real calling that God has given us. Isn't it full on Duck Dynasty? Happy, happy, happy? That is not the Great Commission. Okay, we are to unplug. So he says, much ministry today is spent mopping up messes rather than unplugging stoppers. Justice gets to the root of problems. Justice unplugs stoppers. We don't need messy water flowing through our churches and communities. We need justice to roll on like a mighty river and righteousness like a never-failing stream. That's from Amos 5, verse 24. So last slide, Karsten. One of our problems, and it's just not Byron, I think it's churches across Canada, across North America, we like to talk about these issues, but we need to go and do. So let me just give you some possibilities, some things that we're already involved in, some things that you can be involved. You say, if we're to seek justice, so what do we do with that beyond just talk about it? People out there aren't interested that we're just talking about it in our sanctuaries. They want to see justice. They want to see the bright lights in our community. Sanctuary London. I think, Beth, you told me that your group is going to Sanctuary Toronto this week. Isn't that neat? So you know Sanctuary London. You know Gil. Actually, Gil is going to be speaking here one of the Sundays I'm away. We are big partners with Sanctuary London. And you and I can partner with Gil. Gil and I have coffee once a month, and Gil said, Byron Community Church is one of our great partners. Makes me feel good that we're involved with Sanctuary London. He mentioned, I won't single anybody out, but he mentioned a group of you folks who were there the other evening for a function. And Gil said, our folks love it when people from Byron show up at our events. Sanctuary London. Next, Byron Cares. I wasn't sure how this ministry was going to go. I wasn't sure that we had great need for food and clothing here in this section of London. But if you've been following our updates, over the last while, the food pantry has been empty quite a bit. And we keep replenishing. And it shows us that, in fact, there are those who are poor and hungry, even in this section of the city. I see that the buggy in the foyer looks pretty full. Keep filling it up, and we will keep providing that kind of work. London Crisis Pregnancy Center, Deb, the baby bottles, okay, you've got 2 weeks to go. We'll collect them on Father's Day. What an incredibly good ministry here in the city of London. Having impact even into our schools, even our public schools. This is a great ministry, and Deb, we are delighted we can partner in this way. A-OK, I said last week, I think the Lord is tapping somebody on the shoulder saying, this is a great way you can be involved in carrying out the Great Commission and the Great Commandment to Aboriginal people here in Canada. This will be the year 5. And one of the mandates was we don't want to just drop in and do a one-year stint and feel good about it. We want to develop relationship. And it's been neat, Gail and Rick and others, how those relationships have been built and solidified. Still need a few people? So if the Lord's tapping you, here's a great opportunity. Africa 2013, I've mentioned. Tomorrow night, International Justice Mission. Rebecca and that young man beside her, who I look and go, it looks like a mini Len. Great to see Finn here. And Rebecca, you guys know, some of you know Rebecca? Isn't that cool? She's a great person, isn't she? If you guys were available, you'd likely want to show up tomorrow night, to listen to her. She is going to be our keynote speaker. And ladies, get fired up. You should buy a ticket, invite a neighbor. You say, well, but my neighbor's not a Christian. Yeah, that's my point. Because the world wants to see that we're real, that we're authentic. The world's tired of Christians who just say, well, we believe this and this, but we ignore this and this and that. So, Rebecca, all the best tomorrow night. I hope it's a wonderful evening. And then Harmony Through Harmony. Hey, I don't know how the Lord will call you to partner with Harmony Through Harmony. I'm going way out on a limb here. I have absolutely no permission to do this. I'm looking at the board of elders going, oh boy. I'm very sincere. I hope our relationship, this is just a beginning. Because I like what you guys are doing. I really do. I believe in it. So we got to figure out where this will go. Wouldn't that be exciting? That we'll say, you know, it started here, but 10 years from now we're going to go, did you ever believe that we get to this point? Now, am I dreaming too big? No way. You're from the West. You guys dream big. It's just part of your culture. We're from London. We're way more conservative. So just give us that opportunity to partner with you. Go and make disciples. And I believe, ladies, gentlemen, brothers, sisters, that there's a missional power in good deeds. We're not doing good deeds just because we're wanting to hook people in. It's just because it's who we are. But when you allow the Lord to work in and through you, it's powerful. People are going to ask, why? What's it about? And it draws them like magnets to the person of Jesus Christ. Let's stand, and the group's going to come up. They've got a great song to finish with. So why don't we...